Oh, that's right. Good afternoon, everybody. How you doing here today? Yes, I'm Ann Eller, and yes, we are ready to talk to a very interesting guest today. He has a very different accent. You probably know him around town, whether he's on city council or he used to work in the solicitor's office as a victim's advocate. And of course, now he owns Cafe 312 right here in Greenwood. Today, my very special guest, can you guess, is Ken Wiltshire. How you doing today, Ken?
I'm good, thank you. And I'm very honored to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
Absolutely. Well, listen, you know, you certainly have had a varied life.
Yes.
And we spent some time talking about how you got from A to B to C, and then you went to F, and then I think you went back to D. But anyways, how does it feel to be an American citizen?
Oh, it's great. It is undoubtedly the greatest country in the world.
Yeah?
And so
you paid to say that, or were you forced to say that?
No, not at all. No.
What's the difference between the United Kingdom, then, and the United States? What makes America so much better? People need to hear this every once in a while.
I think because you have everything. It is truly the land of opportunity, and I'm living and breathing that now because I've had so many opportunities presented to me. In Britain, and I still have a great love and affinity for my home country, obviously, and will always do so, and my mother.
Well, you can find other people that sound like you there.
Yes. That understand what I'm saying.
Yes.
Translations required. But my mother always told me that I bleed tartan, so I will always have a place in my heart for Scotland. But America is the land of opportunity. There's not that many opportunities. You've got a lot more bureaucracy and class differences. That means differences between rich and the poor, whether it's barriers so you just can't get over. I remember when we bought our house in Due West, I suddenly found myself a landowner of 10 acres. I would have never in my whole life have ever been able to own 10 acres in Britain. I mean, that's unheard of because the land is so expensive. So you have such tremendous democracy. You have all the wonderful religious beliefs and the different splits between all the different religions.
Diversity.
Diversity is an excellent word. And as much as there's many problems, there's this tremendous opportunity for everybody to get out there and do something. And I guess I'm living proof of all the different things I've done since I've been in the States. And so I was very proud. It was a very emotional day for me.
Was it? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I know that becoming a U.S. citizen is for those and for so many that would like to be U.S. citizens. And, of course, immigration is a big issue in front of our country. How are we going to handle all the people that are here, legally, illegally, overstayed visas? It's a big issue for our country.
Right. But at the end of the day, America has always welcomed them.
Mm-hmm. Well, we wouldn't have America.
Right.
We wouldn't have America if we hadn't welcomed
Absolutely.
Them.
Absolutely. And so whether or not the Native Americans invited us, I don't know. But it's always been a land that's welcomed us, and I think we have to continue with that welcoming. And I think it's very clear that there are many, 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 many jobs in this country that our average American doesn't want to handle. And therefore, we have countries and peoples from other countries that are very willing to do it, very physically able and capable to do those jobs. And that's been repeated time and time again. I remember in Germany, the Germans decided they didn't like the Turks.
Right.
And they wanted to throw everybody Turkish out. And
they couldn't find anybody to do the jobs.
Nobody wanted to pick trash. Nobody wanted to clean the streets if you're an average German. And so there's got to be a place for that. As to how many undocumented workers they are, at the end of the day, they're still buying goods here. They might not be paying all the taxes that we pay, but they're paying the sales taxes and everything else. They're paying the gas taxes. So they are putting money into the economy, whether they're legal or not. There has to be, and I'm not an expert, so I'm not going
sure.
to go pontificating about it, but there are obviously people cleverer than me need to work something out so that we can continue to welcome those people that want to come here.
Yeah. obviously a very emotional issue for
I'm
you.
I'm an emotional guy.
You're an emotional guy. Should I get a Kleenex here for you, Ken?
No, literally as a victim advocate, they knew me as Mr. Kleenex. That
Mr.
was one
Kleenex.
Of my nicknames.
Yeah. Was it?
That was one of my nicknames, because I always had Kleenex for all my victims.
Did you?
Yeah.
Did you carry a big box with you?
Or all the time.
All the time?
Pockets full of the little wrapped up ones.
God, Mr. Kleenex. Okay, yes. Well, see, here's one thing I didn't know about you, Ken.
Oh, it's all coming out. It's the confessional table of Ann Eller.
Oh, the confessional table of Ann Eller. Okay. Well, you came to the United States for a convention.
Correct.
Is that right?
Yes.
What were you doing?
I was doing network marketing at the time for an American company based out of Memphis, Tennessee. National Safety Associates, it was, and they were doing air filtration and water filtration, which is, I still think, very very good stuff. I don't even know if they're in existence anymore, but at the time, it was astonishing to me. We used to do it in Britain. I started it in Britain, working for them in Britain. It was astonishing that if you take the chlorine or whatever chemicals are in the water supply out of the water supply, all of a sudden, coffee tastes better, tea tastes better. The astonishing, one of my biggest eye-openers was when I cooked English peas in clean water. That is water that still got the minerals and things in it. And it was like, oh my goodness, where has the flavors and taste been all my life? Because it's not been masked by... The chemicals are there for a good reason. I mean, I don't want to upset CBW. The chemicals are there for absolutely a good reason because we have lots of pipe systems. Who knows where they're going, what they've been, how old they are. And so you need to put chemicals down there to stop any bacteria building up. And some people would, in some countries, they put fluoride in the water, which is good for your teeth, according to the reports. Minerals are very good, naturally occur in the water. They're good for our systems. So we don't want to take the minerals out. And so as long as you've got a filter system that taking just those chemical things or bacteria out, granular activated silver is one of the ways that bacteria can be taken out. And then we used to do air filtration, and my ex-wife could not sleep without her air filter. And so I know the product worked, it helped her sleep a lot. And so you take all the pollen out of the air, all those people with allergies, I'm not in the business anymore. But.
Sounds like you are, Ken. You still get a kickback here somewhere?
No, as I said, I didn't even know if they exist anymore, but many air filters don't work. You really need to study it up and go online and Google it, as they say these days, and see which one's affected. But it probably would give some people a better night's sleep if they had an air filtration system, a HEPA air filtration system in their bedroom.
Well, okay, so you came over here from, we're in Memphis.
In Memphis, Tennessee.
Yes, and this story leads into how he met his wife. So you want to go ahead and tell
ex-wife.
Us how you met your ex-wife. Yes, well, I mean, she was your wife at one point.
Indeed, for 15 years.
15 years.
And a glorious 22-year-old son out of that wonderful union. So.
All right.
I came to Memphis for a convention for the National Safety Associates of Memphis, who was the air and water filtration company, and I brought my downline with me. The people in network marketing will know what that means, or multi-level marketing will know what that means. And the hotel was full. They'd overbooked. And
it was supposed to, it was a really nice hotel there.
It was Crown Plaza, next to the convention center.
Convenient, easy to get to.
Absolutely. Just walk across the bridge. Anybody that knows downtown, right next to the pyramid. And so this lady who was had worked in the hotel industry all her life, was very well known in Memphis, Tennessee. She'd been around the hotels that would be the ones catering for the convention and said, look, if you get up to capacity, I've got this brand new prototype she was developing and for Promos Corporation, a prototype called Homewood Suites. Some of you may know that. It's already a chain around all over the place. That was back in the late 80s, early 90s when she was doing that. And so she said, I'm not ready to open, but if you want, I can take your overflow guests and we can use it as what they call a soft opening. And so the Crown Plaza walked us, which is the terminology used in the industry, and it was a beautiful facility and it was greeted very well. But of course, part of my job in network marketing, you use the 10-foot rule, and I was immediately trying to recruit her. Well, obviously, I did a really good job of recruiting her because we were married for 15 years. And so
and
that's
within
how
6 months,
happened.
Right? Something like
that. I met her in the October. She, it was obviously you know, it's obviously
love
one
at
of
first
those,
bite.
Yeah, isn't that strange? Nobody would ever really. I don't think if somebody told you, nobody, oh, there's no such thing as love on first sight or whatever, but it.
I said click, first click, bite.
No. No, you keep coming up with these innuendos of drinking and biting. I don't know where it comes
biting,
from.
Yeah,
I don't have that reputation.
Yeah, okay, all right.
And so she came to Britain in November. Met all my friends, and they said, yeah, go ahead. So I got the clear light from my committee, as it were. And then I came back in December, asked her to marry me at the kitchen table in the kitchen in Germantown, Memphis, as a suburb. And then I moved over lock, stock, and barrel, as I like to say, in two containers worth of stuff in the February. So I did a 360 degree on my life completely in 5 months. So.
Oh.
And we ended up in Memphis and stayed in Memphis for about 6 months before we went to the next stage.
Okay.
Over to you, Aaron.
All right. Okay. Well, it's an interesting story, and maybe we'll make a little more sense on why he opened up Cafe 312. So that's why we're talking about it here today. Yes, I'm Ann Eller, and yes, I'm here with Ken Wiltshire. We're going to hear a quick word from our sponsors, and we'll be right back.
Gold. Gold. More precious than any other time in history. Do you have gold? Do you need cash? Then bring it to SFG. That's Sharp Facets Gallery, 1220 Bypass 72, Greenwood. Telephone 229-6613. Don't forget, we buy diamonds too. Paying the highest prices for your gold and diamonds at Sharp Facets Gallery.
Oh, that's right. We're right back here, Sharp Facets Gallery, this afternoon. Yes, I'm Ann Eller, my very special guest this afternoon, Ken Wiltshire of Cafe 312. He's also on City Council, Ward 4. We're going to talk some of that. But we were just talking about how Ken got here to the United States. And I guess, now, when you came over, you came with a valid green card.
Yes.
Yes.
Correct.
But you didn't become a citizen till 2001.
Correct.
Correct. So how long was that you were here?
It's just a very long process. I mean,
That's the point I was getting to.
Yeah,
it is a long process.
It's a very long process. You have to go. I had to go to Charleston. She, my wife, to wife or wife to be, wife has to come with you.
And to make sure it's not a sham wedding, right?
Right. Yeah. Well, no, the fun part of it is all the time you have a green card, she has the perfect right to phone up the immigration people and have you tossed out.
God, what power!
Yes.
Yes, dear. Yes, dear.
I used to remember that very clearly. And so you go for an interview. I had to go to Charleston for an interview twice. I had to go to Atlanta for some more processing. I had to go to Greer to do the test, which is the 100 questions, and they give you 2 hours to do it, and I think I was finished in like 20 minutes. Mm-hmm. And that's when they say that every immigrant knows more about the United States than any other U.S. citizen does.
Well, they certainly know more civics.
Well, all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
Like who's your, I mean, easy things like who's the governor and stuff like that. But so you do that. And then, and all of it costs money every single time.
Sure.
It's a fee for this and a fee for that. So there is economics reasons to not to rush at it. I mean, you can go off and you can hire a lawyer for thousands of dollars and get it done a lot quicker. But we didn't do that. We just did it as it happened. We're in no particular time. And you wait for the interview. You go off for the interview. And so it
you
took
didn't
us
mind,
a long
you
period.
You didn't mind being under your wife's power?
No, not at all. No, she's a very powerful woman, as anybody that knows the ex will testify to. And she was developing a business, so we had to do it. Like I'm, you know, like Cafe 312, everything we're doing is being done out of cash flow, and that was the same. We were unemployed for a time while this was going on, and so you have to delay. You know, you can't suddenly decide to go to Atlanta because you have hotels to pay for and meals and gas and everything else. Although gas in those days, for you all of you, can remember the wonderful days of 77 cents gasoline and 83 cents gasoline. Just,
less than a dollar.
Long gone.
Yeah, that is.
Yeah.
Now, how did you end up, though? You were in Memphis, and then how did you end up at the Belmont, though? Because that really is the next leg of the trip here.
It's just another example of what a lucky SOB I am. She worked for a large corporation. They managed about 20 different hotels. Most of them were chain type hotels. Mm-hmm. They'd received a letter from Joe and Allison Harden, who owned the Belmont Inn in Abbeville on the Court Square, saying that would they be interested in managing the property for them. And they were just literally took it as a bit of a joke, because 26 bedroom bed and breakfast was of no interest to people that got 200 or 300 bedroom full scale hotels. The ex said, well, actually, that would be a very good place for my husband and I to start, and it could be fun. And she also said, it gets me out of Memphis where there's a lot of skeletons in the cupboard. And so we came on our honeymoon to Abbeville and stayed there and realized there was a lot of work to be done, a lot of things
that
we could do.
Now, you stayed there. You stayed there undercover.
Yes, incognito.
Undercover. Okay.
Innuendo again from Ann Eller. Please know it's not coming from me, all this innuendo. Who knew Ann Eller had all these innuendos stashed away in her closet?
There you go.
It was obviously going to be a great opportunity. So we came down and ran it for almost 2 years, I think it was, yeah. And Campbell, who's my son, who's 22 now, for all of those that know him, he's growing up. And he was born, literally, in Abbeville, so he's an Abbevillian, and he spent most of his time in a crib next to the dishwasher in the kitchen.
So it was a good experience.
It was a great experience, and you asked earlier on about the man around the house, but that was a great experience right there, because, I mean, we had to do all the maintenance ourselves, including putting screws in boilers when they sprung a leak and fixing the old...
Well, there's some really old systems over
there.
Oh,
my goodness me, it was ancient. Even though the Hardens had spent $1 million on it, and we still had lots of places that, were cranky, exactly the same again as 312. I mean, the previous person had spent a lot of money on it, but we still had horrors in terms of electrical.
What do you think the new owners have done with the Belmont? Have you been back over there?
I did. I haven't. Actually, Tatiana, I believe, is the lady that manages it now. I think she's done a phenomenal job. I met them all, because the whole family, I started managing it originally. And it's because it's had lots of people since us.
Sure.
I mean, it's been through a whole myriad of different souls in between us. But they seem to understand one hospitality. And it's always strange to me that people get into the hotel or restaurant business that don't know anything about hospitality, just in general. And so they seem to understand hospitality. I think they've established themselves that they are in there for the community, which is another important factor. And she's done a lot of right moves. I think she's opened up the basement into somewhere where you can have food as well as drink. So there's a good bar, a good restaurant downstairs. Then the problem with the Belmont, an inherent problem with the Belmont, is as soon as you walk up the marble steps, everybody feels they have to be in a blazer and khakis and dressed up.
Yeah.
And so they don't get the type of customers where Bill Savitz gets so well at the Village Grill, mm-hmm. who does a phenomenal job. And gets an incredible high-value dollar meal over there, a really good meal. They don't get that because people, they could
the
do
image,
that.
Yeah,
it's just the image of walking up and down. And so...
the other thing is walking up and down, right?
Yes.
Sure,
but there's an elevator
right,
at the back.
Yes. At the back. I think a lot of people may not know that, yes.
So I think they're doing a great job, and I love to see old ladies like that. As you remember, I had this big battle on the city council trying to preserve lots of Kitson Street Mill, mm-hmm. and so I'm always trying to preserve some of our heritage, because I've seen all over the world how good some of these old buildings can be transformed.
There seems to be a different attitude in the United Kingdom, England, and Scotland, and everything towards old buildings. I mean,
reusing. But we recycle 100. We recycle so
That's
much
what
more.
I mean,
that was another battle I've had since being
creative recycle, creative restructuring, creative recycling.
Yeah, and I mean, some of that would have some of our religious leaders in America probably spinning, because they turn churches where the population has moved on, and the church might be an anciently beautiful church, they're turned into discotheques and cash and carries, or wholesalers, as it were, or supermarkets. And I'm sure a lot of people wouldn't like that, and it wouldn't necessarily here. They still knock things down, but they don't lock.
Sure.
They try very
more,
much. Yeah, very
more
much
history to
make
it.
Make use of the building again. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. So that was a battle you went to bat for, Kitson Mill over there.
Right, almost got lynched on that one.
Well, that was really still your beginning introduction to the city council, wasn't it?
No, it was a little bit on. I'd got some notches on my belt already, but that was unexpected. I hadn't really expected the ferocity of the anti-brigade that wanted everything flattened, literally.
You know, right.
Don't leave anything. And I still think it's the wrong decision. I still think we should have preserved it. Now, everybody can argue, well, the chimney stack was dangerous and needed to be brought down, that the warehouse really wasn't much use to anybody. But we're a textile city.
Right.
We don't have a textile museum. There's a phenomenal collection of the cells have, which really needs to be brought out and dusted down and shown to everybody. There's so much mill equipment probably that's gone, should have been rescued to show people what we're about. We're a mill town. We don't have a textile museum. And then when we started talking about a textile museum, they're talking about building one. Well, you know, we could have had it all. We could have had it all right next to the... There was a right. warehouse. If we'd right. wanted to convert it, that could have been converted. And the original Greenwood Mills office building, thank goodness, we were able to preserve. Hopefully we'll be continuing to preserve it, but because the site, you know, the site has to be developed, and the site has to be developed in a way that's make the Mill Village, Greenwood Mill Village people happy as well, because they're going to be looking at it. So they've expressed their opinions. They expressed their opinions very loudly and clearly to me that I was not wanted and they wanted to knock it all down. But thankfully we rescued one out of the three. I'd have liked to have rescued all of them because I think it would have made a great facility we could have turned into a textile mill. I'd like to turn the whole site into a museum and entertainment complex. I did plans for it, but you know everybody laughs at me because they go, "That's $20 million." But you have to think big. That's what I do.
Well, yeah, you do. You do. So that's been very interesting. I know that the city received a $200,000 brownfield cleanup grant from the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency for the old Greenwood Mill site. And they are following up with the funds include a 10% match from the city that would be used to cap the site. So it's interesting. This is something that is a work in progress even today.
Oh, aggressively so. The cap is really just to way to make sure that whatever's built, they're going to build it on dirt
solid,
that's clean.
Solid
and they don't
founded.
Have to worry about it. In terms of any contaminants. So all that dirt that comes in has to be cleared by DHEC, it has to be screened, it has to be, you know, all sorts of things to make sure it's the cleanest dirt you've ever met. That's an oxymoron right there.
There it is, see?
But we as a city are aggressively marketing it. And in fact, the people in the, Mr. Dink Tatum, I think, owns the adjoining mm-hmm. plant. He is looking to do some stuff with his. So whether or not we can use all of the plats, the two plats together as one site, all of these options available to us.
Well, it's very interesting. Hey, we have a multifaceted man sitting right here with us this afternoon. His name, Ken Wilshire. We are going to hear South Carolina Radio News, a quick word from our sponsors, and we'll be right back.
McDonald's presents Confessions of an Ex-Hipster.
I loved cappuccinos, so I put on an itchy turtleneck and grew a goatee. But before I knew it, I was into French films, indie rock, and not bathing. Luckily, I got help from McDonald's McCafe cappuccinos. Now I'm watching football, wearing khakis, even high-fiving again. Thank you, McDonald's.
New McCafe mochas, lattes, and cappuccinos from McDonald's. With fresh ground espresso and real steamed milk, it's all the coffee, hold the attitude. At participating McDonald's.
Visit your local McDonald's in Greenwood and Abbeville today.
Oh, that's right. We're right back here. I'm Ann Eller. Yes, and my very special guest, Ken Wilshire. He is the proprietor of Cafe 312 right there in Uptown Greenwood. And, you know, Ken, we've been talking about a lot of different subjects, but one of the ones that interests me as far as your background is, how did you get to be a victim's advocate? Because according to your background bio here, I don't see anything that says victim's advocate in your what you should be doing. So how'd you end up doing that?
I think there's an adage that says in the right place at the right time.
Okay.
I was looking for normal employment. I'd been self-employed. I'd been doing man around the house, which is basically doing people's honey-do lists while I was baby-minding my son as my wife was developing her business. And I was in a play with Jerry Peace at the Greenwood Community Theater. And I'd been putting out my resume to people because obviously my wife was going to be self-employed for a long time. So it failed to me to try and get a job with normal
benefits and hours
and stuff like that. And because we'd been paying a massive amount of medical insurance costs at the time. And so get a normal job was my effort. And Jerry said, oh, you speak to towns. You know, there's always jobs going in the office, and you'd probably make a good victim advocate. He'd obviously seen something in me that he felt would be the requisite criteria for that job. So I interviewed with towns, and towns said, absolutely, come on. Because I'd known him before, I have to say. So this is a bit
in full disclosure here today.
I'd known him before. This is exactly the same as the network marketing. It was the 10-foot rule. I was using my warm market. And so I started with them. That was how I did it. And I guess I lasted 10 years. I must have done something right. For three different solicitors. Was very honored to work for Towns and Jerry Peace, and then lastly, David Stumbold.
But that has to be a tough job.
It's one that you never win. In the prosecution service, and in law enforcement and the legal profession, the tide never goes out. The tide's always coming in, and it's always washing up on the shore of Flotsam and Jetsam, constantly. At Lawrence, I was based in Lawrence and Newbury, which I was very glad of, because I didn't really want to know, especially now as a city councilman, I didn't really want to know whatever my neighbors were, what crimes they were committing in Greenwood. And so it was in Lawrence and Newbury counties where I practiced that. And we used to get 500 cases a month into Lawrence. And the judicial system might have maybe 4 or 5 days of court. Well, you can't get rid of 400 or 500 cases, so you can get rid of maybe 8 or 10, and especially if somebody wants to have trials all the time, which is obviously what the defense attorneys wanted, to have trials. And so you get this massive buildup, this log jam. And that's the problem. And also, people come in, quite rightly, they want people castrated or flogged or hung from the tree, and you have to explain to them that, well, we're going to be lucky if they get probation or if they get even any time in jail at all. And so a lot of the time I was having to be a spin doctor, like they do up there in Washington, D.C., spin all the stories to make it more palatable for people. But essentially, I was a punch bag. I've had chairs thrown at me. I've been punched, but I've also been hugged and kissed a few times. So
yeah, you know, you had said earlier when we were talking that the Eighth Circuit really, you think, is too big a district.
No, it's a cumbersome. It's a unique one in the 16 circuits within the state of South Carolina, in that it has 4 counties, 2 of which are big, huge in volume, and 2 of which are small. And the Eighth Circuit Solicitor's Office, each solicitor handles more cases than any other solicitor in the state of South Carolina, just because the way it is. So whether it should stay as the Eighth Circuit, maybe it should be split off, maybe that's a way to fix it. But the amount of volume of work, as I said, the tide never goes out. You're climbing this mountain all the time, and the peak is always going ahead of you. And no matter how clever any of the solicitors are, be it Jones, Peace, or Stumbo, or any of the individual prosecutors that are there, assistant solicitors, deputy solicitors are, you're never ever going to catch up. And the court system knows that, and the judges know that, and that's why cases are dealt with sometimes not necessarily as just a way as you would like to. It's done for expediency. But the taxpayer has to share some of the blame, because nobody wants to pay a prison jail guy to be in jail. I mean, you want to be paid good money if you're going to be spat on or have something waved at you don't really want to see. And all the other rigors that a correctional officer has to go through in jail, you have to pay them a really good salary to do that. You have to have jails built. If your jail population is so big, you have to have facilities. Well, nobody wants a jail in their backyard. Mm-hmm. Nobody wants to pay for the jail in their backyard. And so until the taxpayer goes, yeah, you know, we want these people to be locked up. We want them to be locked up for a long time. We want them to be carefully watched and given a, you know, not necessarily harsh life, but some sort of life, that requires staffing and professionals and trained professionals, and that's money, and the taxpayer don't want to pay it. That's the same with law enforcement. We need more city police in Greenwood. We struggle every day with how many policemen we have on shift, especially now.
And you're getting ready to open the Walmart up here.
Especially now, because as the city gets more and more stretched, now, if you can imagine, you've got shoplifting going on at Walmart in the one end of town next to Jerry's, and then you've got something going on at Ross's or at Kohl's at one end of town, and something going on at Publix, you know, and then that's just shoplifting. Then you add in car crashes and other crimes, burglary, whatever. You have to add it up, you know.
It's too hard to cover. You know, one of the things that I think is very interesting about Greenwood is the fact that, let's just take up there where Walmart is, the Walmart that we've had for several years.
That's
it's
in the county.
Correct. And across the street is in the city.
Yeah, it's crazy.
And I think from that standpoint, that is bizarro. Yes.
It's even more on Montague. I mean, you've got the UPS store. Mm-hmm. Is in the county,
okay.
And Jay Peters is in the city, on the main street.
Right, you know? Right. It's
and
just
let's not even get into the fact that our main street has four different names.
Yeah, right. So there are some issues there, and I will say this, thank goodness the city and the county work together, the sheriff's department and the police department, without that.
Oh, incredible. An incredible conviction rate. Just incredible. And partly that, as you and I were talking, I don't think that was part of the AIRD program, but one of the benefits that I think most law enforcement will say is they're very happy that we're not on an interstate. An awful lot of crime flows up and down interstates, and the fact that we don't have that means that most of our law enforcement officers, and I will put a shout in here for Greenwood Police Department, who do a phenomenal job with very little resources, and really should be praised for what they do. Interstate gives you crime, and because we don't have it.
Well, it gives you easy access.
Yeah, we know most of the cases our law enforcement are going to go and see somebody on a camera in Little Cricket or wherever, not picking those out for any particular reason, but they'll be able to spot, and so we know most of our criminals, so that helps. In terms of
that is a good thing, to know your criminals.
Yes.
In a community.
Right.
Hey, we're right here at Sharp Passage Gallery on Meet Me at the Diner this afternoon. Yes, you just heard that from Ken Wilshire. We'll be right back. Don't you go away.
They say every kiss begins with... But at Sharp Facets Gallery, every smooch begins with Sharp Facets Gallery. Which do you want? A little kiss or a big smooch? I'll bet a big smooch. So shop Sharp Facets Gallery, 1220 Bypass 72, Greenwood, for rock bottom prices. And smoochable results.
Oh, that's right. Good afternoon, everybody. Hey, it's been an interesting afternoon. I hope you've learned a lot about Ken Wilshire here. He has, of course, He's given up his job with the solicitor's office. I read that it says that you left the solicitor's office because you had become sour and cynical. When you've dealt with murder, rape, and burglary for 10 years, you lose your feelings, and when you first become a victim's advocate. So I guess that's, is that why you left? Because you were just burnt? I guess it would almost be burnout, wouldn't it?
It's totally burnout. Because it's the same thing day in, day out. You and I just talked about, and really you should be listening to what Anne and I talk about when we're not on the air. But the tide never goes out. I mean, you've got this stuff, all this crime coming in all the time, and you see different solicitors come and go, assistants, deputies, the actual name solicitors, and they battle and they do their best, and it's just the same old things, and you're constantly making excuses and saying sorry to people. No, we can't do that. And,
but in truth, in some aspects of it, and this goes to the domestic abuse issue particularly, we have a culture of basically women, not that it can't be men too, but basically women that are very dependent and won't stand up to this, and that had to make it difficult for you to see issues where people were badly abused, and yet you wanted to help. And in the end, police, the sheriff would pick this person up. But if the woman wouldn't make the case, it made it darn difficult for them to take it any further.
Oh, almost impossible. You're working with two hands tied behind your back because your star witness is saying that they fell over the coffee table or walked into the door or the light fell off the ceiling and hit them on the head. And that's not to belittle by any means the ladies that suffer at the hands of men.
It's hard to understand how South Carolina, you know, South Carolina is so low or high, depending on how you want to look at it, 46 in the United States for domestic abuse.
It's an epidemic in South Carolina, and I'm not clever enough to give you an answer as to why.
Right.
And the
state, but you do have a lot of insight as to, and I don't think we really need to get into it. But you do, in working 10 years with this, you saw all different sides of this.
And saw the law changed, and it didn't make the slightest bit of difference. You can change the law upside, sideways, and down, and it won't make it any difference. The ladies either are knowingly in a situation where they're going to get abused and their children will see them get abused, which means that abuse will then carry on into the next generation. That's part of the problem.
Sure.
And that the young girls in the family will see that it's okay to be abused. It's part of life. The young men in the family will see that, you slap the wife up. That's just a normal thing. It's the same as smoking. Everybody smokes in the house. Everybody, the kids will be smoking in most cases. In most cases, these ladies don't choose that life deliberately. They get themselves into that situation. They fall in love with a guy, and they have children, and they stay at home, and all of a sudden they've got no cash to leave. They can't leave. They've got the children as their baby's daddy,
right?
So you can't leave him behind. And so they're in those economic jails in situations where they can't get out as much as they would want to. And in some cases, they're totally afraid. So they know they have to come in and say, no, he didn't do it. Because if they don't do that, they're going to get beaten up again anyway.
There's
this circle of abuse. It's a very clear pattern. It starts off happy, and then there's a fight, and then he apologizes and says it's never going to happen again, and boom,
it happens
off
again.
You go.
Yeah.
And so it's a societal problem, and it cannot be fixed by laws at all, because somebody, either the churches or whatever, people need to change their attitudes.
Well, that's
back
what
to
we've
the drug
done.
Thing we talked about.
Right. Well, yeah. You know, and that's what we've seen. Certain aspects have changed in society. For example, seatbelts. Mm-hmm. You know, over time
nobody
that has
them.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Now, nobody wanted them. You're right. And but now people get in the car and hook their seatbelt, and they don't even think about it. And that's just using one example of how you can change society, but it takes time.
Right. And I think it's because they don't think about it.
Right.
That's come from generation to generation. It's got watered down each time. Now, you still have a lot of holdouts, a lot of people, like helmets on a motorbike.
That's a ridiculous one to me. I can't get over that one here.
But back to, again, people want to break the law.
Break the law. There you go. Hey, listen, you know, we've talked a lot about a lot of different issues here today, and I hope one of the things that people have begun to understand is, number one, what an interesting life you have had.
Very blessed. Very, very, very blessed.
And now we have to talk some about Cafe 312. And what the heck, somebody that was in all these different businesses, what made you decide to open a cafe?
Very easy. There was a niche. It was very clear to me that there was a gap in the market ever since Coffee and Dessert Company closed down, which was the original one that mm-hmm. used to be there on where
in the church.
Uchi'i first is where Uchi'i was before. That was the original Coffee and Dessert Company back on Waller, I think is the name of the street. And then it moved to St. Andrew's Church.
Right.
And then
talk about
more.
Having an interesting business in a church. There you go.
There you go. Right. In America after all.
Right.
Nobody blinked. Wow.
Right.
There's a contradiction. And so that was the niche. There was also my own experiences. My girlfriend and I You know, if we wanted to go for a glass of wine somewhere, there wasn't anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it was either a bar, sports type bar, or Danish, which is Trattoria, which is where we ended up. And then, of course, Danish won't let, he will, starts off letting you sit there having a glass of wine, and then he'll bring you an appetizer, which you eat, and he goes, well, you need to eat something else. And so the next thing you know, you're having a full meal, which is always good, always wonderful. But so, you know, that combined with, I guess, in my head, I wanted to do it in 1977, actually. Almost with a colleague of mine, we almost bought a bakery coffee shop in 1977 in Macclesfield in England. And if any of you know me, he was the guy that came over here after 42 years I've known him, and he insisted I be his best man. So he got married with me being his best man over here last October, and he's coming back in June. So he's laughing because he said he wanted to do this in 77. So it's always been
in me. It was a lifelong dream.
It's always been in me, and I've learned, again, because of my being so lucky, I've traveled the world, and knowingly or unknowing, I absorbed lots of information that helped me now and ended up with Cafe 312, which is, you know, hopefully very European. It's been extraordinarily well received. So that was why I did it. I did it because it was a niche. I did it also because I believe in the uptown. I mean, everybody hates us because we keep spending money on the uptown. But if you go to some other towns and look at their uptown or downtowns, they're decaying, they're horrible. You've got to do that. And so you have a city has to have a heart. And the uptown is our heart. And no matter what's going on in the county or what developments are coming in and out of town, you have to have a heart. And our heart beats really well, very strong. And I think it's been very wise investment. And so I decided to put my money where my mouth was and spend it in the uptown. And so that's how much I believe in it. I think it's the right place to be. I think it's the niche. I think we've now made a very comfortable place for ladies to come. 70% of my customers are ladies that want to come. We have students. We're incredibly cross-generational. Mothers bring their daughters bring their mothers, and fathers and sons. Lander students, Wesley Common residents. I mean, it's very heartening that it's working so well in terms of the population that we're bringing in. And the
you
best
look
thing,
like you've gotten a little gray hair, though, over this.
No, that was 10 years in the solicitor's office.
Okay. The best thing?
I lost the weight.
You lost the weight.
Yeah, I lost
yes,
30
you
pounds.
Did. You lost 30
pounds.
Lost 30
pounds. Pounds running up and down the staircase and running around and the stress of it all. It's a very, very, very stressful business. Opening your own business, not the coffee shop business. It's actually very rewarding. But it's a very stressful business. I think what I've learned is that one of the things we need to look at, if the city can, when people open a new business, and the city has been incredibly helpful. I don't believe it's because I'm a city councilman. I do believe they would do it.
Uh-huh.
No,
you think
really,
so? Really?
Really? Hand
okay.
of my heart.
All right.
I really think they are willing and able to help whoever wanted to do anything uptown.
Okay.
And I tell other people that. But the most of the time, there's no incubator system. There's no grace periods. And that's what new businesses need. They need some sort of incubation system where they can develop their skills. That's what I talked about with the bank the other night. You know, you're expected, like a newborn child, on the first day you're born, to be able to run a sprint and do calculus.
Yes.
And you can't.
Right.
And so whether or not the city can do some incubation situations for different industries or different businesses, whether or not government, the State House, the South Carolina government, Department of Revenue, all these taxes that you have to pay, whether they should give you a grace period.
I think this is just called the handout there, Ken. They've got a handout for everything here, government-wise.
No,
yes.
I've not had a handout. The only
The handout is the government is looking for the
Absolutely.
Handout back from
Absolutely.
You.
Yeah.
Hey, you're listening to WCRS. We'll take it over just a second or two here. But yes, I think there is no rest for the weary when you've started something. You've got to figure out how to run it.
Pay the government first and everybody else later.
Yeah, exactly. You gotten paid lately?
No, haven't been paid since September.
You know, and that's one thing that I think is very interesting. You have employees.
Yes, 12.
Yeah, 12. And, you know, they've always got to get paid first.
Absolutely.
And you have no problem with doing that. Absolutely.
Yeah, we do.
Yeah, we do. But it is very difficult to open a business in today's world. And I think in some aspects, while, you know, the government touts people opening businesses and everything, I think from a lot of our young people, they're not that excited about opening a business when they see people working like you or like me. Why would you do it?
You've got to be stupid.
Got to be stupid?
Absolutely.
Right across your forehead.
Totally stupid, and you've got to be incredibly thick-skinned, literally. Yeah. I mean, I it's the hardest thing I've ever done.
But you love it.
Absolutely.
See, now, isn't that weird? It's the hardest thing he's ever done, but he loves it.
But it's not work.
It's not work.
It's not work. I mean, it's that utopian that you always hear people talking about. It's not a job if you enjoy what you're doing.
Right.
And I enjoy what I'm doing. You know, I get up every morning and go to bed late every night, and then I'm satisfied and enjoy the challenges.
Yeah.
Because it's all my fault if it goes wrong. But on the other hand, if it's good and it works and successful, well, hey, man, I did it.
That's a good one. Now, let's see. Yeah, your hours there at Cafe 312?
Monday through Friday, we're open at 8 o'clock in the morning, all the way through to 11 o'clock. But as a couple of people have found out, if it's like being deserted, as some nights it's been, you know, we'll close at 10, but not really much earlier than 10 o'clock. And on Sundays, we open at 9 in the morning and close again 10 or 11 o'clock at night.
And what about Saturday?
Yeah, Saturdays
and Sundays. Saturdays and Sundays.
Weekends, 9 o'clock to 11 o'clock.
Okay, all right. Yeah. Well, you need to go out and visit Cafe 312 if you have not. It is a very comfortable place. And even though you took an old building, it has a very nice feel to it.
Thank you.
I know you got into a lot of, what shall we say, issues with water and electrical. It was a lot of issues, but you made it happen, and kudos to you, Kim Wilshire.
Thank you. And it's not just a coffee shop, it's a wine bar, too, so come for wine and beer, range of wine and beer.
And what else do you serve?
Well, we do a lot of lunch. I think we're almost famous now, thanks to my sort of heart attack chef, because he had a heart attack at lunchtime one day. And so, but he's back up and running, but he makes an incredible quiche, and so we've almost become famous for our quiche, I guess, and our pasta and our fresh made-from-scratch soups at lunchtime. We have a full range of sandwiches at lunchtime. We're going to be increasing our offerings at breakfast. At the moment, it's danishes and scones and croissants. And then at nighttime, we've got at least 16 or more different cheeses, salamis, and we do this new thing now, which is a price-fix menu. Where we will do
very, very French.
The price fix.
Yes, exactly.
Absolutely.
Right. Yes.
And so it would be an appetizer and a main course, or a main course and a dessert. Tonight it's just one dish at the moment because it's more expensive. It's a beautiful poached salmon fillet on frisée and haricot vert. That's basically a lettuce, a special lettuce and French beans with a boiled egg and some olives and things like that. So that's what we're offering tonight. And then also to mention, and for an exclusive for you, is that starting this Wednesday, we're doing Wine Women on Wednesdays, where between 5 and 6:30, we're going to be putting out free cheese. So if the ladies want to come in and network, and they can have a nibble on free cheese provided by us, and buy themselves a glass of wine and chat and talk. And so that's what we're doing. We're doing Wine Women. And I think you said you had a podcast. So I don't know if I wave this.
Yes, a podcast. Wine on Wednesday for women. Yes. Well, that sounds like a lot of fun.
So we need an exclusive for Ann Ella.
Okay, well, there you go. See, now you need to get out there and try it. You also have a Facebook page.
Yes, and we will, the new menu, which everybody's been harassing me over, but really was a case of listening to our customers and see what they wanted to make sure we were on the right track.
Mm-hmm.
And so the new menu will probably be available in 7 to 10 days. It's an all singing and all dancing menu. I brought a proof
singing,
copy.
Singing and dancing menu. Does that mean
it's
that the waiter and waitresses come out and sing it to you?
No, it's an expression. and it's very different, though. I think people will find it interestingly different.
And you also
and then that
have
will go on the web. That will go on the web page.
On the web page?
Cafe312.com, which is still sort of under construction at the moment, but it will have the menu up there, and the people will have menus that you can take away and put up in their boardrooms and canteens and things like that.
That sounds great. And then you also do live entertainment.
Yes, we have incredibly successful. Talk about a business decision that was made by a city councilman for a city reason rather than a business decision. And everybody said Greenwood Uptown on a Sunday is dead. And I said, no, it doesn't have to be. I'm going to prove it. And so we started Music on Main, which is live entertainment from 7 o'clock to 9:30 on every Sunday evening. And yes, you can buy wine and beer on a Sunday uptown at Cafe 312 while there's good live entertainment. But I'm not just doing the, as it were, because I'm not normal, the normal live entertainment. We've had everything from a cello recital by a professor of music from Presbyterian College. We had some Lander, a Lander professor and other musical educators with clarinet and
so a little
cello.
European flair to it.
It's very much so. We've had Spanish classic guitarists. We had last weekend, we had Stan Lockerbie, who's one of the diehards of the Greenwood music scene. And it was just, we had everything from Bob Dylan to the Beatles. This weekend we have Trey Ward, of course, who is our most famous, probably, musician right. in town. I don't mean disrespectfully to Jake Bartley or Ashby Stokes, but in my mind, Trey Ward's the most famous guy. And Ashby Stokes is actually playing on Father's Day at Music on Main on Sunday. But Trey Ward's this weekend, and of course he's Mr. Bluegrass.
Absolutely.
And Mr. Politics as well, but he only plays music on Sunday. He doesn't get into his politics.
Okay. Well, listen, Kim Wilshire, it's been a thoroughly delightful afternoon. I hope you've enjoyed it.
Thank you. Yes, indeed. That went quick. Wow.
I absolutely did. In fact, we've talked for over an hour. This is WCRS right here in Greenwood. Ken, thanks so much for coming out today.
My pleasure. As I said, I'm very honored to have been asked. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Well, this is WCRS. That's going to do it for us. I'll be back in the morning. Bye-bye, everybody.